Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, it's Jane Hoffman. We're going to have a light discussion tonight about the Republican candidates. I believe the first tier, Bobby Jindal, was rather impressive. And secondly, I did think Carla Fiorina stood out. But Rick Perry also had some poignant moments. And there was another governor, Pataki from New York, that seemed rather professional. Now, I was just reading over Rick Perry's data. He was a distinguished Eagle Scout. He was born in Paint Creek, Texas. He's fifth generation, born to cotton farmers. He served as governor for 15 years. He just left in January. That was quite a long time. His two predecessors were Ann Richards and George Bush. There's also a guy named Bob Bullock. He was a commissioner of agriculture in Texas. He's been a longstanding public servant. He was also a member of the Texas House of Representatives from 85 to 91. And he was a Democrat until 1989 and a Republican from 1989 on. So he switched parties. The thing is, you know, there's so many people running. Some of these people we're already aware of, like Rick Perry and Mike Huckabee. But it's really hard to keep track of all their accomplishments. Now, John Cassius, I think his name is, from Ohio. Let me get his full name here quick. He had a lot of good points tonight. He said he's turned his state around in Ohio. But he also, the thing that I don't like about him is that he used to be a news consultant on Fox. So I don't know. I just think, I wonder how he went from that to becoming the governor of Ohio. It just seems kind of strange. So let's try to find all these people in here. Well, let me go over some details until John gets on the line. Oh, here he is. Greetings, John. I have one announcement to make. Do you want to hear what it is? Okay, John's call just dropped. We'll have to have him call back in. So Rand Paul was floundering tonight a bit. Some of his ideas are radical. He claims that he's the only one who has a decent budget. And John, I'll pull you back in a second. He also said that he wouldn't give to any every single foreign country that asked. You know, it's on a merit-based system, but also he said he wouldn't borrow money from China to just give money to other countries. I'm not really sure if that's how it works. But let's pull John in quick. Hi, John. Are you in a stable position?
I don't know if anyone's in a stable position considering our economy, but I'm as stable as one could possibly be.
Well, what I meant is you're not on the bike or in a place where your phone's not working too good?
So far, so good. I'm just actually in Marina Del Rey. I'm just kind of cleaning up a house and getting ready to head out.
Yeah, so that's fine. I'm glad you're still there. So there was a 5 p.m. debate with seven people tonight, and then there was a 7:45 p.m. debate with 10 people. Did you get to catch any of it?
Not even a whisper. And did you have a favorite or two?
Yes, in the first debate, I liked Bobby Jindal from Louisiana and George Pataki, who was the governor of New York during 9/11. And Carly Fiorina was okay. Fioroni, how do you say her name? The one who ran for governor and lost. She ran for senator against Barbara Boxer's seat and or Feinstein, and she lost.
Yeah, it's, I think Fiona, but that sounds close enough.
Yeah, anyways, in the evening debate, I liked Mike Huckabee and Jeb Bush. I can't really ever like Mr. Walker from Wisconsin because he's done so many devastating things there, including dismantling the teachers' union. So he didn't really come off as that impressive either. I think Mike Huckabee had a lot of original answers. And there was a neurosurgeon, a black man named Ben Carson, who's running. He said he's the only one who's ever removed half a brain or operated on a baby still inside the room. But then he said probably a lot of people in Washington, D.C., who's missing half their brains or something like that.
Good line. Nice.
Yeah, so I guess Mike Huckabee, you know, you can tell he knows a lot about budgets. He made one comment on federalism that, you know, like the states aren't at war with the legislature, but it's federal impositions, you know, and mandates that crowd the arena up at the state government level. I'm trying to think. Walker, one of the Fox News, you know, it took place on Fox News, not CNN. Walker from Wisconsin was promised 250,000 new jobs and he only produced 125,000. And he claimed that some of those were replacement jobs in Wisconsin after the economy crashed. Paul Rand made a controversial statement on Israel. Do you know who Paul Rand is?
Yes, uh-huh.
He's that other guy's son, you know, that other radical who's run in the past. Oh, what's his name? I don't know. Anyways, he said that he wouldn't allow funding for Israel through foreign money. In other words, why borrow foreign money just to give it to other countries? There were about Donald Trump and about three of them were complaining about the $19 trillion deficit. And Donald Trump only stood to one-liners. He didn't really describe any policy platforms. He just basically kept repeating things like America's in trouble, China and Japan have exceeded us in trade, and so has Mexico. So, and Jeb Bush came across well and defended his position on education and Common Core. Oh, by the way, it's Rand Paul, not Paul Rand.
Nice correction there.
So let me just read a few highlights, okay? Mike Huckabee said when asked about people who are transgender serving in the U.S. military, he said, "The military is not a social experiment. The purpose of the military is to kill people, break things." Well, then that was just like kind of an opening liner. He basically said that the defense of America is to defend each American here and overseas, that our B-52s, there's only like 50 working ones, and the last time that they were upgraded was 1962, and most of those B-52s are older than him. Rand Paul said at 10:35, "I don't want on his position on gay marriage. I don't want my marriage or my guns registered in Washington." At 10:34 Eastern Time, Governor Kasich, who I mentioned before you called in, who used to be a Fox commentator and would sometimes fill in for Bill O'Reilly, he was asked about his opposition to gay marriage. He said he's an old-fashioned person, believes in traditional marriage, but he added he went to a gay wedding recently and that God taught him to love people unconditionally and he would never treat people differently according to their belief system. Trump was really not that impressive, John.
Wow. How about his hair? Did his hair stand out?
It looked a little ruffled tonight. I mean, it was about the same as it normally is. You know how he, like, it kind of swirls in the front?
Right.
But, you know, he really had to keep his mouth shut because they had an interview. You have to imagine now there's 10 people on stage, and he only got a tenth of the time. Now, two people that I want to mention that I thought were too subdued was Lindsey Graham in the first debate and Ben Carson, the neurosurgeon. You know, you have to be biting in these debates. Like, you only got, like, 60 to 90-second sound bites. You have to stuff it all in. And I can tell you straight off the bat, out of all 17 people, the best talkers were Jeb Bush, Rick Perry, and Bobby Jindal. The other people are effective, but they weren't. Those people know how to talk, the ones I just mentioned.
Well, that's interesting that the Donald didn't place as well. However, I would imagine when people go to vote, due to money and popularity, it's going to be just Bush and Trump and, you know, maybe Huckleberry Finn. I don't know. What do you think?
It's Mike Huckabee. Okay, here's a good line that I just read. Ben Carson is very polite and isn't someone who pushes his way into conversations. That's great at a dinner party, bad in a debate with 9 alphas. I think he meant 9 alpha personalities. Ben Carson did say that he would make a strong military a priority. But to tell you the truth, he was a weak policy wonk too. You know, he didn't advocate for a specific position. I saw Rand Paul be specific about how he reduced the Kentucky budget 5 times. Mike Huckabee was specific on state government, and so was John Cassis, who was talking about how he manages the poor in the medical system in Ohio. But I, you know, if when I'm watching a debate, don't you want to kind of go for someone who knows specifics about government, who has an understanding of the framework and how the federal and the state work together?
Oh yeah, and I think you want people that that aren't just using cliches and general phrases. But unfortunately, that's what it kind of gets down to. I would think, well, one thing about the Donald, he can always say that his girlfriend and family are going to be better looking than the other ones.
It's kind of like having Hugh Hefner in the White House, except for he's not a womanizer, but Trump was called on the carpet about his comments about women in the past. They listed like 5 adjectives he said about women. And then he confronted the beautiful blonde, who is one of the MCs, and said, well, I'll be nice to you, but it seems like you're not being that nice to me, so maybe I'll change my direction or something like that. So, like, I mean, I don't know. He has kind of a bullying attitude when it comes to women or people he doesn't like.
Right. He's an entertainment personality, so that's going to be something hard to reverse. Now, Ronald Reagan was an actor, but he wasn't so much a comedian. He wasn't a shock person. He was more conservative values, win one for the Gipper, kind of that all-American, almost like John Wayne, like the old traditional American values. And he became, he's like, I think, president of the Screen Actors Guild or represented, you know, the actors. So he was the union. So he was pretty much good with
Okay, we do have a caller on the line who I'm going to give a chance to speak in about a minute. But basically, I just wanted to mention one thing, John. Donald Trump, he was also being approached by the people asking the questions, like, why did you give to the Democratic Party? Why was Hillary Clinton at your wedding? Why did you give to this candidate or this candidate in the past, you know, like in the Democratic sector? But the fact of the matter is that, you know, he said that he's donated to a lot of people, and he was being attacked as kind of a quasi-Republican. Now, I want to mention one thing about Ted Cruz before I bring the caller in the line. Ted Cruz is a dark horse even in his own party. A lot of Republicans have openly criticized him, especially the leadership on Capitol Hill. He's bucked the system, but he's like a constitutionalist lawyer, and he knows a lot about the Constitution. And he served on some justice court. I can't remember which one it was. So it was kind of scary because four of them said they would dismantle abortion right away when they got in, or at least Planned Parenthood funding. But Ted Cruz said that the day he took office, he was going to reverse at least 20-some executive decisions that Obama has made. Now, I don't want some, you know, gunslinging Texan coming in there and just upheaving the whole system. So let's see if this caller is just here to listen or wants to talk. It's from the 347. Hi, this is Jane and John. How are you doing tonight?
Hi, I'm okay. My name is Hotep. How are you all?
Good. Did you want to make a comment about, first we're covering the Republican debate, and then I was going to try to squeeze in the execution of a black man in Mississippi named Jonathan Sanders. Which topic did you want to call about?
Well, both, because it all connects to the supposed all-American values. If we look at American history, honestly, we clearly see that females have never been equal. And slowly over time, there have been improvements, but females aren't treated equally. Dark-skinned Americans have never been and still aren't. And Native Indians, of course, have been generally, other than the ones that received the casino money, oppressed. So if we want to be all-American and conservative, it means we are conserving racism, sexism, and imperialism. America would extend.
Are you saying this in relationship to, like, the candidates or just in general?
Well, it relates to the candidates and America. Generally, you won't usually hear candidates say we have to change the nation because for years we've done A, B, C, D to certain groups. And I think that's because the average voter doesn't want to hear that. We benefit from the pain of others. Poverty benefits certain groups, the prison industrial complex. Imperialism benefits certain groups. And I think politics continues in America to perpetuate that caste system, the group at the bottom, so that the few at the top can benefit. And then the average black person, white person, and Latino argues and fights instead of realizing that there is a larger problem, but that's a slippery slope, because when I make that statement, people then make the assumption, well, no need to talk about racism or sexism because we're all in this equally, and in actuality, we're not equal in this system. And there's a bottom group, there's a middle group, and there's a group above them. And
have two questions for you tonight. First of all, I want to ask you, are you familiar with Bobby Jindal, who is well, his parents are immigrants from Punjab, India, and do you like him? And secondly, what did you think of Ben Carson, the black neurosurgeon who was on the debate? And thirdly, what did you think about the absence of the Black Lives Matter issues like police brutality and excess?
Regarding Bobby from India, I hadn't heard of him. I'm writing the last name as we speak so I can look into him. What's the last name, please? Bobby?
J-I-N-D-A-L, and he's a Louisiana governor. He actually won on a runoff campaign a couple of years ago. I know that the first time he ran in 08, there was some kind of runoff, you know, like in Louisiana, if it's close to a tie, then they have a runoff campaign. He used to be a member of the U.S. House of Representatives from 2005 to 2008, but I don't think, except for in a couple places in Georgia, there's not hardly any Indians, you know, I'm not talking about Native Americans now. There's not that many representative in American politics, but he's an excellent speaker.
Yeah, I'll look into him. That's the type of diversity that America supposedly in principle is about, but it doesn't generally happen. Regarding Carson, most, I know, because I'm from this community, most black people don't support him. His positions are somewhat, not the best for dark.
Well, he is a conservative. He's kind of like a Larry Elder libertarian type, probably. I mean, I'm just throwing that out there. But, you know, Larry Elder's a talk show host in L.A. A lot of blacks don't like him because of his ultra-conservatism. But Ben Carson came across to me as likable but a little too soft-spoken. Like, he wasn't, you know, when they only have 90-second sound bites, you kind of have to put out yourself out there. But I think he was probably the most likable person on the stage tonight, because he was cracking a few jokes. And, you know, like one time he said, am I going to have another chance to talk? He was actually just very appealing in that sense. But
he is appealing just like a man named Charles Rangel is appealing. And beyond the appeal, I met with Charlie Rangel, is what are they really about? It's almost like Clinton. And today, politics is very much about character as opposed, well, not even deep character, entertainment. I think a lot of politicians entertain us, but in reality, at the real level, what are they doing about, you know, entrepreneurship, school loans, poverty,
I'm going to let John talk, but I'm going to throw one thing out here. I think tonight, were you aware that there were two debates, one at 5 and one at 7:45? So they had
I don't keep up with the politics much because I've determined that it is generally a game they play on us. Both the two parties,
I agree with that because they dismantled Obama's popularity about a month after he got in office. But I guess my main point is that at least five candidates tonight tried to advocate what they had accomplished in their states as far as managing their budgets, creating job growth, the same old crap you heard 4 years ago, but some of them seem legitimate. Now, John, do you want to say a couple things? By the way, I live in Minnesota. My friend John is my co-host in California. Go ahead, John.
I'm in New York.
Yep,
well,
I recognize your area code.
Yeah, first of all, thanks for calling in and for being part of the process. It's awesome. This is what America is really all about, is to be able to express your viewpoints. For myself, politically, when I'm looking at a president, I really don't look too much into the nuts and bolts of their little policies. I tend to look for someone who's got a strong arm, and by that I mean someone who's willing to stand up to other countries and not back down and be weak. Myself, I like talking, being diplomatic, being friendly, but I think when you're dealing with dictators, you're dealing with regimes and evil people, you don't want a weak person. Like, I wouldn't send my minister in to deal with a terrorist. I'd send in SWAT. You know, I'd send in the Navy SEALs, that kind of thing. So to me, I look for a strong president. I figure the policies and economics, that's really Congress. And no matter what a president has, it's really got to go through Congress. It's got to be approved by that way. And I think there's always limitations to what a president can really do. You really want someone that leads the country in morale and spirit and that kind of deal.
Think it takes more than that nowadays? I mean, anybody could lead someone in morale.
Well, not really, because people, we have leadership that is weak. We have people who just, they don't have any convictions. They follow what the popularity polls are, and no one's willing to really stand up and say, this is what I believe, as compared to, well, everyone wants abortion, so I guess I'm in. Everyone wants transgender. I guess I'm in. Hate to say anything against it. You know, and then if public sentiment changes, now, it's not that I don't have a problem with someone wanting transgender or wanting homosexual rights. What I'm saying is, as long as you're consistent to that, regardless of what the popularity polls are. And we're not seeing that, you know.
Okay, well, I agree with that, but every Republican tonight made a biblical stance, including Ben Carson. He said that he wants the tax code to be like the Bible, 10% tithe across the board, whether it's a weak year or a strong year. Now, every person quoted their faith, including Scott Walker, who quoted a Bible verse. They all quoted how they would completely defund Planned Parenthood. There was only one person who questioned one aspect of the whole thing. It's mainly stemming from that controversy having to do with now they're selling body parts of the babies for stem cell research, I believe. So that's created quite a big controversy.
Well, I had a question for our caller because it's good to kind of get some feedback. Do you feel that that there is a system where everyone would be profitable and would, or in other words, we talked about there's the rich, there's the middle class, there's the lower, class, there's the poor. Do you think there is a system where everyone would be middle class or up or successful? And do you think that there's a better system than what we have in America to accomplish that?
I think that there is hope in the American dream, but there are better systems. I think that many dictators that exist around the world exist clearly because of our CIA and European influence, and some of those dictators were our friends unless they turned. I think that the American system, middle class, poor, upper class, if you really look at them, it's rare that you see people from certain ethnic groups crack into those upper echelons of financial power. And the ones that do tend to have a one or two extremes. Either they're extremely on the conservative side or they have no spine and they tap dance in a way and not stand up. I think when it comes to terrorism, that we are doing a lot of damage around the world. Back in the day, many of the folks were called mercenaries and guerrilla and freedom fighters. I think that the terrorism issue is one that hurts innocent people, but it's directly related to us blowing up little children around the world in the name of freeing their families and destroying. So we play a part in the dictatorships and the terrorism by bullying and generally other than helping people that in other regions that may need a hand up, we should stop policing the world. But one of our presidents started that a few decades ago. He said we would be the police of the world, and we've continued that. But our system is broken for many groups of people who have always been outcasts.
Yeah, I agree with most of what you were saying. I think I live in Minnesota, where it's a pretty diverse state and progressive. We have one black congressman here. The Native American population has quite a bit of autonomy in northern Minnesota. You know, there's a lot of tribal autonomy and decision-making. I agree with well, we have a regular host on the show named Don Gallimore, and he thinks that, you know, the white European model of is basically just oppressive, and that we've taken a few steps back in the last couple of years, starting with Trayvon Martin. So I think a lot of I don't know why all these issues are resurfacing in America as far as excessive police force, militarization of urban areas. It just seems, and then the large military presence in the Southwest United States. with Jade Helm, which is something you may not have heard of. But none of those black. The thing that disturbed me, and I guess in response to what you're saying, is that only Rand Paul brought up Ferguson. Nobody else brought up the Black Lives Matter thing or what's really going on in America. They just stuck with foreign policy issues, how they're going to handle Russia and Iran. Then they dealt with budgetary issues, and a few of them talked about the crisis with abortion. But they didn't. There was a lot of topics they never got around to. Now, John, I wanted to mention that we only have 15 more minutes tonight because I inadvertently canceled the premium by mistake, and it won't be rectified till next week.
Well, that's all right. You know, we can condense our thoughts. I think there are a lot of injustices in the world. I think, though, when you look at our military, I don't think we have our guys sitting around going, you know, here's our first target. Let's hit a hospital, then let's get a school, and then here's a church. Let's kill the old women, the babies, and things like that. We do fund terrorist groups, or, you know, we deal with undercover situations. But I think the people that we deal with in those situations, whether it's Saddam Hussein or whether it's, the dictator of North Korea or other countries, we're talking about some really nasty people. The question is, does a superpower like America, do we stand back? Do we let, half the world go communist? Do we ignore Muslims with nuclear weapons? Do we let someone in the Middle East take control of all the oil and cut us off? You know, these are heavy, intense questions. I'm kind of the attitude that everything happens for a specific purpose, or in other words, it's cause and effect. If we don't interfere in some countries, what is the result of it all? It's a very difficult, what is the correct answer? I know in World War II, if we sat back, I don't think we'd be speaking American. I think I'd be speaking German. Throughout the Cold War, if we didn't step to Russia, again, I don't think we'd have the democratic process in Europe. I think we'd...
Well, I don't think, Russia was never... going to invade us. We only had the Cuban Missile Crisis. I think we're getting a little off topic, but John's at a disadvantage because he didn't get to see the debate, and neither did our caller. By the way, caller, are you American born?
No. So I come with a perspective of after living and being born in another region, realizing that when I arrived in America, it wasn't what, I see in movies, and it wasn't what I was taught in the school.
It
is a very different place from the fantasy America that most people are taught about.
Do you live near Albany?
Not too far. Considering, how big America is, it would be, a few hours' drive, so I wouldn't consider it too far. Yeah.
It's just funny because one of our former co-hosts is from that area, Ernest Radio Network, Ernest Sewell. So I was up in Albany a few years ago visiting. So since we only have about 14 minutes left, why don't we just diverge off the Republican track for a minute? And why don't you tell us a little bit about your life, like how old you were when you got here, what your experience has been?
Yeah, I was a teen when I arrived, and I was a, fresh-eyed believer in hope, dream, and work hard. And after being beaten up by police for no real reasons, and after encountering extreme racism in schools, even though my grades were top, they pushed a young white male for the scholarships, and they pushed me into summer school because they put me in a arithmetic class to do $100 plus $50. Therefore, I didn't have the math to graduate, even though I was the highest in Regents in several subjects. And other things just led me to realize, whoa, this is not what I, you know, bargained for. And
you did well at math, you turned your homework in, and what did they do? They didn't give you credit for it?
No, what they did was they put me in a math program for simple addition and subtraction as opposed to the math that I needed to graduate. And so even though in American history, English language, and other subjects I excelled, and RCTs, et cetera, 100% in all the RCTs, track team, captain, et cetera, I didn't get to graduate. Didn't get any scholarships. No one ever sat
with me to discuss
college. But I learned later that I wasn't the only person in New York City that experienced that. There's a clicked mindset that I discovered in our country, where if you're not a certain lifestyle or philosophy, your credentials don't matter as much. And I think unless people's skills and credentials matter more than, hey, who are you voting for? Or, hey, are you a part of my religion? Or, hey, what's your sexual preference? What we get is what we have now, a good old boys network where people may hook up each other and not really the best person rising to the top. And I think we also see this in places where we consider North Korea, and compared to what happens in Arabia and some other nations, the North Korean leader is, you know, almost a choir boy. So my conclusion,
I'm just trying to determine what happened, and I'll tell you why. I'm running for school board in Duluth, and I was at one of the houses last night where I work. I work for disabled people, and there was a black kid there, about 21. He's in the National Guards. He said that he had to finish school through the Adult Learning Center because the principal and two teachers, he would turn in homework. They wouldn't credit him. They would mark him absent when he showed up for class, and eventually he just got pissed off, and he started skipping class and giving them what they said he was doing, even though it was a lie, and he basically dropped out of high school because he was being discriminated against, and his father was a substitute teacher in the school system, and he lived in the city his whole life, so, you know, he wasn't a foreigner like you were, but that's beside the point, but basically, they discriminated against him because of his skin color. And I said, well, why didn't you have your father demand some type of justice? And he said that, you know, he just gave up. He gave up on the whole situation. So it was a rather depressing story.
And by the way, it goes straight through college. Meaning, even in college, I encountered this. I was doing extremely well, GPA 4.0, and still I started writing and critiquing some of the American system, and then suddenly I dropped down to 3.85, and the scholarships stopped coming through. We have a system that's in place, and many people don't see it, because if you're not black or Latino or Native American or open your eyes, what happens is it can just pass right by you like a homeless person. We don't see the discrimination, and these types of stories don't get much coverage in major media because they don't go with the narrative that, you know, you come here, you work hard, that's it, you get somewhere. And I can tell you my portfolio is about 3 feet high, and I go to meetings and people will close the door because in hearing me speak, they don't necessarily realize that I look like a typical black man. They're thinking, oh,
right.
Okay.
Like we have a guy on our show. We have three hosts. He grew up in Milwaukee. His mother was the first black female cop in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. But I knew him for a year at the LA Times, and I thought he was white. I thought he was like an Ivy League Harvard graduate, a white guy. But then when I met him face to face, he was black. So it doesn't really matter like how people articulate themselves, but it just disturbs me that people can't get ahead. Like Condoleezza Rice, she got ahead based on merit. So I don't know why teachers think it's okay to discriminate like that.
Yeah, I used to be a professional in the school systems, and the schools tend to be places of indoctrination. They're not generally teaching our true history, because our true history is pretty painful. So it's like parents that don't tell children, you know, hey, I was in jail, and hey, you know, your mother was raped as a child. Without learning true history, we don't understand the psychological mechanisms behind why a person may act a certain way. So it's a whitewashed history, and that's what also turns off a lot of so-called minority children. They hear about Christopher Columbus being this great guy, discovering America, et cetera, but they don't learn about Patrice Lumumba or much about...
Like he died of syphilis or gonorrhea?
Yeah, not just that. His people used to cut open pregnant women in the Caribbean and let the babies drop out.
Yeah, I recently found an article on one of the first islands he discovered before he made his... He went back and forth a couple times, but he dominated that whole island and took people into captivity just to serve his interests.
Yes.
That's before he even got his claim to fame. John, are you still with us?
Oh, yeah, I'm just taking it in. This is
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, I guess we have about 4 minutes left. What's your first name again, sir?
Hotep, H-O-T-E-P.
Okay, normally we have about a 90-minute show, but what happened is I paid the BTR payment, and then I emailed them and said they used the wrong account, so they... Right now, we're only limited to a 45-minute show. I have to get it straightened out. So we'll just do our conclusion now. We only have 3 to 4 minutes left. I just was wondering what you do nowadays. What's your profession now?
Well, I'm a writer, and I'm an educator. I homeschool my children, and I've kind of extrapolated myself from much of the corporate world because I encountered just direct racism, and I would be fired from a company for speaking up about the person that used racist language in the office. So, you know, I kind of went underground and do my thing aside. But unless we're all honest about ourselves and about the nation, what happens is we don't make a better world. We create one that is delusional in many ways, but that delusion is the pain of other people that we deny.
Yeah, I've actually lost one job because of honesty, and I know what you're talking about. If you mention something about racial discrimination or sexism on the job or other places, in corporate America, it's always a risk to be open about things like that. Now, I wish there was more we could talk about tonight. John, do you have any closing thoughts?
We could probably go for 2 or 3 hours. I think our callers, you know, brought some really valid points and some important points. I also think, too, that I'm a minority myself. I think, though, that you have to factor that in, that that's the way life is. Life is not equal. It's not fair. But I think sometimes we use excuses. By that, I mean I have to work twice as hard, I have to be twice as smart, I have to take advantage of opportunity. There's people that come here, I'll give you an example, the first boss I worked for, he came from Iran in the middle of when the Shah was being kicked out and replaced by the Ayatollah. He came to this country, he didn't speak any English, he was 18 years old. He would get beat up at school every day because we hated people from Iran. We had the Iran hostage situation. This is around mid-70s. The point is, he busted his butt, saved his money, started his own business, started 2 or 3 businesses, and I'm working for him, right? There's a lot of groups that come over here, whether it's Vietnamese, Korean, or whatever, that are first or second generation. They all live in one room. And, you know, they put together to start the family business, or they send one kid to school to get ahead. And they struggle. Now, we have other groups. I'm part Mexican.
We have about a minute, John.
We've been around, 5, 6, 7 generations and still don't advance. I'm not saying that that's all their fault, but I'm just saying that we have to take some responsibility along the line, even when we're discriminated against. Myself, you know, like I have to think beyond that and not accept the limitation. It doesn't mean I'll go as far as everyone else, but I think I'll go a lot farther. Just realizing the card is sometimes just stacked against
me. Well, I think he mentioned that, like, he chose to speak up about it, our caller. He knew that if he dipped below the radar and stayed in the safe zone, that he probably could have advanced.
Oh, I was advanced.